Namaste and welcome to the Bharat Vartha podcast. I'm Roshan Karyappa. India has vaccinated almost 52 crore people for COVID-19. In fact, last week alone, we had days when we crossed the 1 crore mark in a single day. This has been a phenomenal success. And to understand how this is all happening on the ground, we have with us a very special guest today. Dr. Yogesh Panchwal is an orthopedic oncosurgeon at the Dinanath Mangeshkar Hospital in Pune. He's part of the hospital's vaccination team that since March 2021 has done nearly 1,70,000 vaccinations and counting. It's one of the busiest centers in Pune and probably in the top five for the state of Maharashtra. So he's kind of the ideal person to talk about this subject. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, Doctor. Delighted to have you. And also thank you so much for your service. The country is indebted to you.
Thank you, Roshan. And thank you very much to Bharat Vartha. And it's indeed a pleasure on behalf of our very big team of vaccination center. Yeah, and as you said, to achieve those kind of numbers, you really, I mean, no one can do it alone, right? You need a very, very big team. Thanks on their behalf.
Right. I mean, I think our healthcare workers have been real superheroes for us in this very, very challenging times. Doctor, I mean, I laid out the numbers at the very outset, right? I mean, these look like phenomenal numbers and we seem to be reaching newer records almost every day. Can you shed some light on, you know, how all of this is coming together on the ground?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, as everything starts, it started off a bit slowly in January, and it started with the vaccination of the healthcare workers. Everything was new to all of us that time. There were quite a few skeptics at that time, more at that time than they are now. So yeah, everyone had to get used to the entire system, to the use of Covin, and see for themselves that the vaccines do really work. And As that particular process started generating more confidence amongst the people and the masses, then I think as well as the supply had to go up adequately as well. Once that happened, I think we have really taken off very well, and we are really managing our infrastructure to the fullest at present.
So do you see these numbers continuing? I mean, at this pace, we'll probably end up vaccinating almost the entire adult population, right? Willing adult population by the end of the year.
Yes, absolutely. What we can see right now is a very, very great enthusiasm, not just in the urban and the semi-urban belts, but also the skepticism in the rural areas also seems to be going down. If you have noticed the trend in India, when we achieve phenomenal numbers, it's always the rural area that contributes to a very big extent. If you see the amount of centers that are working in the rural areas and the urban areas or the semi-urban areas, once the rural areas start chipping in, and then the numbers really go up phenomenally. That's what we have noticed.
That's a related topic I want to pick up on, which is the whole vaccine hesitancy, right? We have seen tremendous amounts in the US and UK, for example, or elsewhere, whereas I mean, India has not quite been the same, right? Where do you see this? How do you factor this at all?
Well, even in the US, you can see that there are quite a few anti-vaxxers. So that kind of, thought process, anti-vaccination movements can be seen everywhere. Fortunately, in India, we haven't had, a very big group that has been talking against the vaccines. Most of the people are pro-vaccine, and that's a good thing for the country as such. And we are really doing well as of now, as far as the numbers and the processes and the infrastructure plus the vaccine availability is concerned, which was probably a bit of an slowing down issue to begin with, but now I think we are in a position to take care of those as well. So I think we don't have as much of a problem as far as the hesitancy is concerned. Yes, there were some misconceptions to begin with in certain sections of the population, but I think quite a few authorities are taking good efforts to sort of negate those or take care of those particular misconceptions of people. Quite a few efforts are being done. There are a few I read about a few competitions being announced for the fully vaccinated city and a fully vaccinated village in a particular state, and recommendations or maybe stickers being put up in front of houses which are where the adults or the eligible residents are fully vaccinated. A lot of things are being done, a lot of things are being thought about, and slowly and steadily we can see that the hesitancy is probably still there, but going down now quite a bit.
So on that note, how has your earlier experience with inoculating people for things like polio, you know, really contributed to our success? You know, how much of the infrastructure or process framework for mass vaccinations did we already have? And, you know, what did we have to build to enable what we're seeing right now?
Yeah, excellent question, I think, Roshan, because, you know, I've been part of the Pulse Polio campaign way back in 1999 when I was a medical officer in one of the rural healthcare centers. And I have participated in that as well, and I'm now participating in this particular movement as well. And let me tell you that we have that kind of infrastructure that is needed to sort of carry out these mass immunizations. That infrastructure is already available. So all that remains to be done is to make adequate and correct use of this particular infra that is available to us at the moment. Yes, so it makes a big difference. For example, if I have to tell you for today, if we see the number of centers active throughout the country, there are roughly about 57,000 vaccination centers working at the moment as we speak right now. And of these, only 3,400 are the private centers. The rest, almost about 53,000 centers, are the government centers. So already on at the government level, we already have the infrastructure ready. In fact, the private centers had to set up their infrastructure, which was required for, you know, for COVID vaccination especially. And that was with respect to the need of setting up computers for you know, COVID verification and registration and confirmation process. I'm sure the government centers also had to do that, but they probably had the other infrastructure already ready, the reach already ready. They have workers which go into masses. I was the medical officer in the primary healthcare center. My supervisors and my sisters over there, they had a personal relationship with the local villagers out there. So, you know, it becomes very easy for them to reach out, to communicate, to convince, to increase the numbers, to take care of the hesitancy if there's any. So that really is one of the plus points. We just have to leverage that adequately.
Right. Fantastic. Yeah. One of the things that has been really astounding is the last mile delivery that we have sort of built up, right? And this is also enabled mainly by technology.
Absolutely.
So how do you see the role of technology in this? I think we have been extremely proactive, especially with respect to COVID, in terms of the Aarogya Setu app and the COVID application as well. So how do you see the role of technology in this?
It's just phenomenal. You know, to begin with, even I was thinking that the government has made COVID mandatory. Will people be able to register themselves on COVID? Will the vaccination process be really accessible to them? But if we consider the number of people that are using internet in India, and you know, the accessibility of smartphones to even the common population, if we consider that, plus a little bit of help from maybe their employers and from the gentle souls in the society, you know, the use of technology over here, in especially in relation to the COVID vaccination, has been just phenomenal. And to begin with, we didn't think much about it, but as I look to it today, I can realize that it would have been really, really impossible to get the data to, at a click of a button, I now know how many vaccinations are being done in the country, in a state or in a city or in a district of our state currently. I can know what's the status of my center, even if I'm not on site. You know, the stuff has been really amazing. So this data accrual and retrieval has been just phenomenal. If I have to believe the information that has been given out, almost 90% of this is the real-time data that we are getting. Obviously, COVID data gets updated every hourly, but that has been a phenomenal thing, you know. Every jab is being recorded. It goes into the system. And now, as we have increased our experience with handling COVID in particular, a lot of things have improved with COVID as well. It started off with a few things that were missing at that time, but obviously it's a learning process for everyone, right? Those guys who must have been working on COVID must have also realized this, and they have really, really sort of developed that application in a much smoother way now. The functioning is much smoother, and there are quite a few things that are very useful as far as the technology is concerned. I'm sure that's the reason why the other countries are looking towards using the same platform for their own sales.
So this is also a classic example of public-private partnership in play, right? When we look at the vaccinations itself. Do you see this serve as a very useful template for the future? And if so, I mean, what do you see as challenges on that front that we should mitigate?
Obviously, I mean, probably COVID has given us an opportunity to sort of see how a public-private partnership can give great results. you know, I got to see that in the form of PPCR, the Pune Platform for COVID Response, where the private agencies and the government agencies and the private hospitals, plus the industry, they all came together and they mounted a response in such a way, and they took actions in such a way which led to a very good management of the situation when we were going through a very bad second peak in Pune. So that was the first thing that came to my mind. You know, if this happens, we have to tackle a very big issue like the pandemic. You know, there's no other alternative but for the public-private partnership to come into play. And only then it's possible for us to sort of mitigate this type of an emergency or a challenge, I would say.
And we're also seeing that some states are doing better than the others, right? With the vaccination numbers itself. Some are leading, some are lagging. What is the cause for this disparity primarily? And, you know, how do you think we can bridge this?
Well, it's very difficult for me to comment on each and every place, but in general, I can tell you whatever little I could travel in the last few days in the country. I'm seeing a very great enthusiasm and response to the entire vaccination process. So to give you an example, I was in a very remote area of Jammu and Kashmir last month, and those shepherds over there, the Bakarwals, even the younger population had received, the eligible population had received at least one dose. Indore, as we have read a few days back, has got all its adult population getting its first dose, 100% of the population covered with first dose. Same thing is going on places like Himachal. So the states which were behind a little bit are definitely catching up. Obviously, there are some big states. There are certain, you know, the geography is very different. Our geo-social challenges for a country like India are also very different. So I'm sure there will be certain issues. There could be difficulties in approaches. You could have seen pictures of vaccinations being carried out in boats in the lake in Srinagar, and units, the vaccinators traveling on their foot in the jungles of Uttarakhand. So all these challenges are there for our country, and I'm sure that with everyone coming together, we will find a way to overcome these challenges.
So as I mentioned earlier, I think by the end of this year, the adult population may well be vaccinated, but the under 16 vaccination is also a growing concern right now. Given that, you know, children have been super spreaders, and also there's a possible reopening of the schools and colleges as well. How do you think we can tackle this?
Well, yes, there is some movement happening on that front as well, and some trials have already been done. As we are aware, trial of Covaxin in the teenage population 12 to 17 has been carried out. There are some new vaccines that have come in, Zycov-D by Zydus Cadila, which is an intradermal vaccine that has also been tried out in the phase 2 trials. Almost about 1,000 young adolescents were involved in that particular study. So probably that could be approved for use. So we are waiting for the approvals and for the trials and the data to come in, and so that we could have a solid guideline onto which we would be able to vaccinate these kids also. As the colleges are slowly started opening up now, a few of them, we do expect that by next year, probably we could be looking at kids going to school, because currently parents are really worried about sending them to school without any vaccination. So that's been a major concern. I'm sure that by this year end or early next year, we should have the new vaccinations and the new guidelines regarding the vaccines which have been tried out in kids in 12 to 17 years age, which would get the approval for use in this particular age group.
What do you make of the efficacy of these vaccines against a virus which seems to be constantly mutating, right? Do you think that, you know, it will offer protection for the newer strains of the virus, or how do you see this play out?
See, as of now, I think we are holding well. There have been some variants, but fortunately, there seems to be some cross reactivity, and there is some protection, though not above 90%, that could be possible with the vaccines that we are using currently. And hopefully this should help. The newer vaccines that are coming in, probably they are being manufactured in such a way that given a situation, for example, the DNA plasmid vaccine that is being tried out, very quickly you could sort of have a vaccine which could be useful against the variant. If in case we find out that there's some variant that is very troublesome We could use that side of a technology to quickly manufacture a vaccine and that against that particular variant. As of now, I think we are holding well. Things seem to be on the right track. And fortunately, if we continue to take adequate precautions, we should not face a very bad situation that we faced in the last couple of waves.
Right. So obviously, we have done a bunch of things very well, right? The vaccination numbers and so on. If you were to pick like two or three things that we should do better going forward, what would those be?
As far as the vaccination is concerned?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel that probably we should be better prepared to handle the supply and demand ratio. That is one thing that we could concentrate on. That is one thing that slowed us down a little bit to begin with. But then we are sort of making good as far as that front is concerned. So that is one thing that we need to do. Secondly, I think we need to take care of the hesitancy part, which may result because of various factors that have been roaming around, you know, through various messages, through some newspaper articles in the social media. So everyone needs to ask himself or herself that whatever information has been given out, whatever messages are being given out, whether they do really contribute in a constructive way to the society and for the well-being of the country. And then most of the hesitancy part probably would be taken care of.
So I want to abstract out a little bit and talk about healthcare itself. I think COVID has been such a black swan event for all of us, right? And we have all learned many different lessons on many different spheres, right? None more than healthcare, I would say, right? I mean, this has been a very harsh lesson for us on that front. What are some lessons that we have learned from this whole COVID phase itself on the healthcare front?
Well, let me start by saying that the pandemic was one thing which probably none of the healthcare systems anywhere across the world was really ready to deal with. It was a huge thing and everyone and everything crumbled below it. It's very, very difficult practically to have some healthcare system that is able to take care of running round the clock to be able to take care of something as big as this particular pandemic goes. But I think, yes, as you rightly said, there are certain lessons, and the lessons are that, you know, we need to prioritize well. We need to know what things have to be set up very quickly. We need to see what we have to concentrate on. Maybe preventive medicine. These are a few things that we need to think about. Obviously, as we were discussing earlier, only government sector or only private sector is not going to be able to take care of this particular thing alone, because it's just impractical to have a setup for such a huge thing and then keep it running all throughout the years. It's just simply not practical. So yes, when need be, everyone has to come together, everyone has to join hands and work together. So to give you an example, when the peaks were going on in the first wave and the second wave in our hospital, probably when we surgeons did not have a lot of work to do, a lot of surgeries to do, we were helping our medical colleagues in a lot of other things. So we were taking discharge rounds, we were taking oxygen rounds, we were counseling patients who had or relatives who had lost their near and dear ones. So all sorts of things we were doing. Something of that sort, that everyone has to contribute to a certain extent. Everyone has to do their job. You know, together we can see all this through.
You know, finally, this has been a very tough time for all of us, right? And again, you know, especially so for doctors, healthcare workers and so on, right? There have also been amazing stories of resilience, amazing stories of innovation and so on, right? So if you look back at the last like 18 months that we have been under the grip of the pandemic, you know, what are some days and moments, and what are some stories that will stay with you going forward, and what are some things that you will perhaps tell people 5-10 years down the line?
Yeah, exactly, because there are a lot of things that happened, a lot of pressures, a lot of times that you feel that you're going to lose it. We were doing the casualty duties. We were attending to the emergencies, the COVID-related emergencies being wheeled into the emergency rooms. We were taking care of patients requiring oxygen. You know, I still remember that picture. You know, we in front of our casualty, we had got the oxygen lines, the permanent oxygen lines were brought out, and we had set up oxygen sort of, as you can say, oxygen stations. And people who did not have any place to be admitted in the hospital, they would be sitting in the chairs with a mask on their faces and noses, and they were being supplied oxygen. We were treating them, injecting them with anti-blood clotting medications there and then itself. We were running fever OPDs. It was as bad as handling about 350 to 400 patients in the OPD per day. You know, stuff was really, really very scary. We can't even imagine what our colleagues in the ICU and in the wards were going through at that particular time. You can only imagine. Yes, there are certain stories. A lot of people have worked a lot. They have given a lot. And I feel that's one thing that we have to remember, that a lot of people have lost quite a few things, close ones, their own near and dear ones. So I have a colleague of mine who lost his father, and he was working in the ICU and just did the last rites and joined back. Yes, there are certain things which we won't be able to forget.
Absolutely. I think it's perhaps etched in all of our memories. You know, before we part, Dr. Yogesh, any words of advice to whoever is listening to this podcast? You know, what should they do? What should they be aware of? And yeah, anything that you'd like to say?
Yeah, just follow all the precautions, follow the COVID appropriate behavior. I'm sure you all must have taken your vaccine, at least the first shot by now. Don't be hesitant, go ahead, go take the second shot as well. And we need to follow the guidelines as and when they come in regarding the booster doses later on. We'll have to wait for a little while for some time till the government comes out with guidelines on that. But yes. That's what we need to do as of now.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yogesh. This was a great experience talking to you. Thank you again for your service.
Thank you, Roshan.
On behalf of everyone, I really, really appreciate you know, the work that you and your fraternity have done over the course of the last 18 months. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Roshan. Thanks on the behalf of my team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Bharat Varta podcast. If you want to see more content like this, then don't forget to subscribe to our channel. We started Bharat Varta to facilitate long-form discussions on politics, policy, and culture. We don't necessarily endorse anything that was said in this episode. If you wish to offer us feedback, do reach out to us on social media. We are at Bharat Varta on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You could also get in touch with us on our website, www.bharatvarta.in. The links are in the description below. Until next time, stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.